I'm Stephen John Drew.
I'm Chris Farrell.
And I'm Steve Boyd, and we're the hosts of Walking the Walking Dead,
a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the one you're listening to now!
The opinions expressed are those of each individual.
Check out other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
Now get ready, because geekiness begins in 3...
2...
1...
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten. Did you just say womp womp? And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Flashy lights, Christmas, woo!
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 146 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where most of us are relegated to the normal drudgery, while one lucky boy was whisked away to the land of Doctor Who and brought home quite the souvenir. And just to give you a hint here, this is not something you can typically buy in stores. Well, you could probably buy it on the internet, but it's probably not legal if you do.
Not so much, no.
Anywho, my name is Keir, finally back in the GPR studios after a little bit of a hiatus. Hope y'all miss me. Get out of my freaking chair.
Nope.
Joining me is Jay. Jay, how are you this evening?
I'm doing fantastic.
All right. And over there in the corner, who I just shoved to the floor, is Haley. Haley, get up and introduce yourself.
I miss the comfy chair.
And this is the first time we've all three been on the show since, like, I don't know, early June. It's weird.
Weird. It's crowded in here.
I know.
Nobody noticed.
I was getting used to the elbow room.
I know. Keir's long legs taking up all the space again.
Well, God, I ate my vegetables when I was a kid.
So this week we're catching up on quite a bit of news, and we decide to live vicariously through Keir and his time in the UK, and specifically his visits to notable Doctor Who filming locations and the Doctor Who experience.
Yeah, got a chance to, in the midst of the trip, about 4 days or so was spent in Cardiff proper, and essentially spent almost all of that time circling around Millennium Park in some degree or fashion, just taking it in. So I'm sure there's a lot more to the countryside.
Keir just doesn't care about it.
Nope, had plenty to keep me busy. So, yeah. I don't even know. I mean, where do you want to get started with all this? Because I don't want to just dominate everything here, because there was a lot to take in, and I've tried to photo document a lot of it. I will be probably putting up a post on the site that'll just have a kind of a walk through some of the images from the experience itself and from around Cardiff, and even some of the location tours that we were able to go on an exceptional UK film tours, I think is the name of the outfit, even though they typically focus more on things that have shown up on television broadcasts. A really nice gentleman by the name of Matt, who took us around and gave us probably about 20, 25 different locations, all within maybe a 5 mile radius of downtown Cardiff that were used in Doctor Who, Sherlock, Torchwood, and even a couple of other, you know, he would mention, oh, and by the way, they've done a couple of other shows, Sarah Jane Adventures, and even some more modern stuff like EastEnders, because, well, where isn't EastEnders when it comes to BBC? But
did you get to see the smear on the pavement where Sherlock hit?
No, actually, that was because that hospital was proper. So that was actually one of their proper English shoots. But we did see a couple of other locations where some of the Sherlock episodes were done. There were actually quite a bit of crossover in terms of locations that were shared between things like the Doctor Who and the Sherlock realm. I will definitely make sure that I share those, because you'll look at them from one angle and say, oh, okay, if you put the faux tree that they put in for that scene, yeah, that's definitely where Rose and Ninth went running by. And then you turn about 90 degrees and say, oh, if you put a food truck right there, okay, now I get it.
So it's kind of like how Monty Python and the Holy Grail was all filmed around one castle.
Yes, which we visited, that castle, Dune Castle in Scotland.
Nice. Which,
yeah, was it a silly place?
It was a very silly place because the little audio tour that you can put on the headphones as you're walking through is Terry Jones.
Nice.
So he says, if you look off to the left, you see a staircase where crazy things were filmed. Like, this is awesome. But I would say out of the location tour, probably one of the most interesting or kind of unexpected things. Well, some of them were just genuinely interesting. Like they would go to one of the parks where they said, okay, here's where the bad wolf moment happens, where Rose realizes that, you know, what the bad wolf representation means. And the camera pulls back and it's on the playground with all the graffiti everywhere. And you realize you're standing in that sort of housing project area, but it's been renovated a couple times over the course of the past 10 years. Like the jungle gyms have been changed around and such, and a few of the walls have been taken down. There were people that were going through in the tour years ago, and the guide was saying, yeah, they were just dying to know if this place ever gets torn down. I want, because they left the graffiti up for a year and a half, 2 years or so, as it was. It said Bad Wolf all over the place. And people that got to see it right after filming had completed were like, God, if they ever decide to rearrange this place, I want to come back and get a brick. And as soon as they said that, little did they know, about a month and a half later, they tore the place to the ground and rebuilt a whole new play park for the kids. And everything went in a dumpster. So they missed their opportunity.
They could have just sold those bricks for $1 a piece or something.
Easy. But it's funny because right as we were walking through there, there was a spot on the grass where they said, oh, yeah, and by the way, just last week, they had just finished filming a couple of scenes for episode 11. For this coming season. So there's a little spot over there, that little square in the grass where everything's kind of mushed down. That's where the TARDIS had been standing for 2 days. So
did you go stand on that spot for a very long time?
We got down on our knees and examined it closely. But things like the location where Rose's dad got hit by the car in Father's Day. We actually got to lay down in the middle of the traffic and reenact it for a second. The guy's like, it's all right, I'll hold up my hands, I'll stop traffic for a minute. You get your pictures and then get back on the bus. All right.
I wonder how often that happens. So it's like, if you live right in that intersection, they're like, oh, great, there's another one laying in the street.
Yep, quite a bit. I had a chance, too, to go to that little, there's a little village area where they had shot 11th Hour. The scenes in the 11th Hour where the duck pond is, where Matt Smith realizes that all the people gaping around on their cell phones, but one person's facing the wrong way. It just happens to be Rory. And so we ran around doing time lapse on our iPhones so that we could do the same sort of action, you know, running through that area. The duck pond was put in by the film crew, unfortunately. It was just a parking space. Damn. But no, it's all around kind of interesting on that tour. The Hub Tower, Torchwood Tower, or actually what you would consider Hub 3 if you're being technical about it, was kind of not totally functional. You know, it wasn't the usual water park that it has around it because there was a massive summer food festival going on. And so they had drained the water out and put barricades up all over the place because they had food carts and trucks and displays everywhere, which was great for us because we got to eat and drink for free for a couple of days. But it just meant that our shots of the Torchwood Tower had a big logo stuck on the side of it during the festival. The experience itself, which is right there on the bay. I mean, if you've seen a couple of photos online, it just looks like a massive hangar that kind of juts out over this pier. It's just kind of interesting because as you approach it, it's, there's a couple of little play parks and things around it. It's a little walking track that goes by for people that are going all the way around the bay, to some of the marinas and stuff around the backside and such. So you're just kind of passing along. It's all very picturesque as the wind's blowing in off the bay and such. And all of a sudden, bang, there's this massive blue hangar, and a TARDIS hanging out over the water off the right hand side and things. And it's one of those things that everybody, I guess all the locals have had around for so often, for so long, that it just barely registers. Except for the fact that we went running a couple times over the course of those few days just to kind of get a chance to see things out of a car and such. So we just, going for a little 5K or something around, and we just happened to be wearing. Well, we were wearing Doctor Who shirts at the time. So every time we'd be running through some crowds and stuff, meandering through them, people would point and go, oh. So we were not only tourists. The experience itself, the staff is fantastic. It's sort of a 50-50 thing. Half of the of what you have access to is sort of an interactive thing. When you go in 15-minute waves, limited number of people allowed in at each time, because you start with this interactive experience where you're wearing a pass around your neck that has a receiver code on it, because some signals get sent to you as you're walking through. There is an audiovisual experience with Capaldi's doctor popping up on screen, asking you, what the hell are you doing here? There's some sort of a crisis. There are some time squids that have caused the TARDIS to materialize inside itself, that old chestnut that we love so much. So you get to go through the TARDIS doors into another facet of the museum, and it becomes one of these things that's very you end up on the surface of Skaro at one point, and full scale Daleks that are coming in on hydraulics all around you and such. But then you have to walk the cemetery with the strobe lights and the weeping angels.
Oh jeez,
that's a load of fun.
Yeah, I can imagine the panic attacks that happened there.
But I guess what they had done is, when they originally developed this during the previous iteration for Matt Smith, they had a different kind of storyline going, the nature of how this interactive piece would go, because it involves some activity from the patrons who are walking through. So you've got to be on the lookout to find these time crystals that have to be reunited with the machine to get you back to your proper time, set everything back in order. So it's, you know, it keeps you involved with it and keeps you engaged, regardless of the age. We had people obviously in their 70s and 80s and so who've known the show for its entirety, and we had kids as young as 8, 9 who were just as riveted to the entire thing. So nice. A lot of fun. And then once you get through all that, you save the day, the 3D element where you've got the ships flying past you and such, and you emerge into the exhibition hall, which is where you get to see an inordinate number of props and costumes and set pieces going all the way back to 63, including, you know, what I thought this was pretty interesting, the attention to detail on this, a lot of the equipment used in the radiophonic workshop. So nice. the vocoders and even the piano strings that they had used with the key to make your original Vorp. So yeah, really, really caught a lot of interesting detail there. A number of TARDIS interiors, both ones that the BBC still owned and ones that were from private collections that somehow had been purchased over the course of 50 years. So you see things like Tom Baker's console and his maroon scarf, you know, the latter years scarf, that were all labeled as being donated from private collection. God, who had the forethought to pick these up? Or the cash on hand at the time. But just really, really incredible stuff. The largest installation was probably, well, it's probably either Tennant's interior, which is there in its entirety.
Nice.
Including the backside of the interior doors, so the reverse police call box signs. Between that and possibly, there's this massive installation piece on the second floor with the silence and their pods, which I was trying to... I wanted to get shots from all angles because I've done a lot of silent cosplay, and I want to. For those of you who are cosplayers and things like that, I'll make sure that you get an opportunity to see some of the costumes in close up here, because they had all the doctors represented. A couple had to be recreations because the originals obviously just didn't survive, or they didn't think to retain them beyond about Pertwee. But they did have things like a lot of supporting characters. Obviously, Idris's dress is there. All of Clara's dresses, because it's all about a fashion show for her these days. Both Centauran representations, old school and new, so you can see when they used to have some facial hair.
Nice.
More Daleks than you can throw a baseball bat at. Both Ice Warriors, old and new, which is kind of cool. I found this particularly interesting. They had, as far as things like showing the evolution of some of the major props and components from the show, you had not only Daleks from everywhere from 63, 64 up, but you had things like all the Cybermen heads, including your cyber leaders of various eras, all lined up. So you could see how those kind of up too, from the silver pajama days all the way up to what we've got today. Just all around, I mean, just really well organized, really detailed. Most of the information on the plaques that are provided were just as interesting as what you were looking at, because they give you a little bit of extra insight into how certain things were chosen, or or why things like the, there's a real interesting plaque. I'll make sure that it's included about the 12th Doctor's recent look. That Peter insisted on a very stark look with dark colors to reflect his first memories of Doctor Who when he was watching it back in black and white. Things like his cardigan and his black boots and his Victorian coat and shirt buttoned to the neck were also chosen so that they could be easily and cheaply emulated by his fans. Apparently that was his decision.
That's cool.
I guess they probably should have mentioned that the jacket is really a pain in the ass to find. But they did actually say on the plaque that the 12th Doctor happens to wear a signet ring with a double band and a green amber stone that was allegedly collected on the planet Raxacorica Phalaepatorius. So that hasn't really been addressed on the program. But if it's in print, maybe it's true.
Yeah. I wonder if that's like a little bit of insight.
It's not true.
I haven't heard anybody deny it. But yeah, all around, it was just a great aha experience. because they realized that a lot of people going through they wanted to see more than just, didn't mean that they didn't have it, but they had things like, I want to see the thing under the bed or under the bed sheet from Listen. So yes, it was there, and no, you couldn't pick up the blanket to see what was under it. But at the same time, it had things for people that wanted a little extra, element of interest and said, the Ood masks, you know, are just so detailed. I want to see how they're made. So they've got a step-by-step assembly process of how the masks were cast and how all of the servos and additional rigging was done on the interior to set the eyes high and wide over the actor's heads. So they really, you could tell that this was developed by folks who had as much appreciation for the show from a fan's perspective as they did from a creator's perspective. You know, if I were walking through this thing and I wanted to know how the hell did they do such and such, well, it's probably there. And if it's not an immediate display, there were a number of people walking around who had just become, they weren't just docents for the museum. They were, you know, really enthusiasts and fans in their own right and had a lot of information at their disposal. So cool stuff all around. They were extra helpful on a certain project that I had going on. I had reached out to Vicky Williams, their marketing director. Hello, Vicky. Thank you so much. Months ago to help me pull off a surprise proposal for Julie. And they were able to actually hide, since I couldn't walk through, I had a TARDIS ring box, so pretty sizable, about 5 inches and 5 inches long and about 3 inches on the side, maybe a little large. And I couldn't just walk around with the thing in my pocket. Right.
Not
time.
In public.
So I slipped it to them early on, and they gave me permission to touch the exhibits and hid it actually inside the BBC Radiophonic Workshop equipment on one of the tables and said, you know, just if anybody gives you dirty looks, just tell them that you've got permission to touch the material. And I was able to catch up with her when she was at her doctor's console. You know, she's been a tenant kid since day one. So, they had photographers hidden all over the place, and they were kind of following us around at a distance the whole time, being very stealthy, did a nice job with it. And I couldn't thank them enough. They were an immense help and very accommodating for us and gave us all the photos we possibly want. So, I think I will make a point, that when you're looking at the photo of the Auto Effects Workshop, look on the desk for the brown paper bundle that's by the pencil case or the jar of pencils. That's the ring. They hit it nicely for them. So yeah, I mean, that was just an awesome experience all around. And just then, you know, for the remainder of the trip, as we were going around, we were trying to find locations. We, you know, caught a police call box that was still in its proper colors and all in downtown Glasgow, right by the Botanical Gardens. There was one in Glasgow center that for some reason they had painted lime green. I'm assuming that because it was in a heavily trafficked area, they wanted to, you know, I don't know if it was still practical. One of them is still practical. One of the ones that we had seen, it might've been in Edinburgh, or in one of the villages nearby. But, at some point, you know, obviously blue was no longer really necessary. They needed them to stand out. Like we need fire trucks to stand out.
Right.
So they started putting them in colors that were sort of like panic colors, I guess you could say, so that you could find them crowd. So, but it just didn't look right at all.
No, I've seen the picture. It's not, but yeah. It hurts. It hurts a little.
It looks like she's been sick. But yeah, so just a great trip all around. So for anybody who has the opportunity to be able to go catch the experience, please do. They tell you that it takes about 90 minutes to 2 hours or so to go through. But I got a feeling that's if you're really just like kind of plowing through it. If you want to examine things and get photos and really kind of get a feel for it, if you want to climb inside a Dalek shell and, you know, play with the armature and such, or, you know, you want to really get a feel for it, give yourself closer to three and a half hours. Because it's just, it's a lot to take in. The interactive component of it lasts about a half hour or so, maybe 40 minutes. But once you get into the museum proper, you start just kind of wandering around. You're going to be there a while.
Nice. Well, that actually leads us very nicely into our first news story, which apparently there's an individual from Wales who has been to the Doctor Who experience, what is it, 37 times or something?
In a row?
31 times.
Well, okay. So... yeah, apparently he's probably spending the 15 minutes on each item kind of thing. Maybe he's a master prop fabricator and costume recreator, and he's just running around each one of these items with a high-res camera, just getting all angles so that he could go home and recreate the entire program. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but there's a fantastic article. So if this has piqued your interest and you're considering going to the Doctor Who experience, definitely go to the show notes and check this out, because it's, it gives you hours of operations, where you can park and how much it's going to cost you, where the food is close by and things like that. It's everything that you could possibly want to know about getting there and making the most of it. Mm-hmm. So very, very well worth it.
Definitely so.
The next news article that we've got is, apparently River Song had another wedding. For real this time, though.
For realsies.
So, Alex Kingston recently got married. Just wanted to wish her congratulations and, a wonderful marriage. And the story is online and you can find all the pictures and everything. So
I like our dress.
It is very interesting. It's not the traditional style, but still really cool.
It looks like something River would wear, though.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It's fantastic. Oh, so what's next on the news list? What do we have here?
Michael Gambon talks about his time on Doctor Who.
Yeah, this was kind of funny.
Speaks very highly of it.
I think it was at a convention he was at or something. He was a Q&A kind of thing. And I was talking about his time on the show as what was his name? Kazran Kardis, right, from The Christmas Carol. And he said, I wasn't very good. And everybody kind of, made an uproar or whatever. And he goes, no, I wasn't very good at all. He said, I tried hard, but I couldn't quite get it. So it's just kind of interesting to hear him go on and say that. And, obviously there's been some people, it's like, oh, it's okay. He wasn't very good as good Dumbledore either. But
oh, that was harsh.
Well, everybody's got their opinions, but I mean, it was kind of nice to hear him, talk about, it was a great experience and he was glad he did it and he just wished he could have been, better for it, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, I honestly don't think there was anything wrong with it. It's still one of my favorite Christmas episodes, so, and he didn't detract from it for me, so I think it works.
A ringing endorsement.
Yeah. Oh, but we've also got, let's see.
Speaking of grumpy old men. Who said that?
Yeah. So this one kind of, this is a mess. Apparently, if Sylvester McCoy doesn't have a Hobbit movie to tell you that he's a part of, don't let him speak. Just don't, because it's not going to end well.
Yeah. So he said something along the lines of, there shouldn't be a female doctor.
Yeah. He starts it out by saying, I'm a feminist, but... That's no, you can't, that nothing good will follow that phrase.
Right.
But, I'm noticing that this is kind of the feeling that a lot of the classic doctors have. I mean, Peter Davison has come out and said it before. I don't think Colin Baker has committed to saying it, but, he definitely.
I honestly feel like a lot of them feel like nobody but them should really be playing the doctor.
Yeah, that's kind of the way that it seems, especially when you get them together. Like, they're all good friends and everything, but it's always like, well, clearly mine is the doctor. Yours is just a spinoff version,
All these others are less good versions of me.
Exactly. So it's kind of interesting to see how that separates, though, because everyone in the new series is all for having a female doctor at some point. I mean, they're all kind of, you know, of the same opinion that Moffat is, like, find the right actor and it doesn't matter what the gender is. You know, it's, you find the right person for the role and then go from there. But everyone from the classic show is, you know, no, doesn't need to be. It's just, no, too far.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's difficult to go and read through this article because it's just, you just want to be like, no, Sylvester, just shut up. Just no, just stop right talking. There.
You know, there were some publicists off camera just like waving their arms in the air.
Right. And then they hit a certain point. They just turn around and their head went into the wall. Like, oh God. But yeah.
Yeah.
And for anyone that has, you know, questioned whether or not Capaldi is actually a true fan of the show, you definitely need to go.
I have not questioned that.
No, but he still goes out of his way to make sure that there is that you know beyond a shadow of a doubt. He was actually recently on the Doctor Who fan show, and these are the great times when you have someone who understands. The best thing you can do with Peter Capaldi is ask him a question about like the classic series, especially like the Pertwee years, and then just sit back and let him talk for 20 minutes. It's the greatest thing to hear him go on that kind of stuff. It's fantastic. But you know, the difference between the Mondasian Cybermen and the new versions, and like, he goes, you can tell this is a fan of the show. He's one of those people that, were he not actually playing the role, would be sitting here podcasting about it. Yeah, you know?
Right. Dude, he could have Kier's chair.
It's real comfy, we promise.
Right, it's a comfy chair.
Don't mind the stains. We can clean those out.
We'll get that dry cleaned.
But Capaldi actually did come out, and this is an interesting article, that he shared his 10 favorite Doctor Who episodes to watch on a rainy day. And it's just very interesting to see which titles he felt made the cut. And he has a little explanation on them, and you can go to the article in the show notes and check them out for yourself, but we're not going to go too much into detail. But
dude, we can do a list. Kier's not here.
You'll never believe what number four is. No, actually, I find it shocking what number four is. Apparently, one of his top 10 for Rainy Day episodes is The Rings of Akaten.
Which is an episode that was on.
Yeah. I mean, granted, there's far worse ones out there. So, you know, we're not, calm down, Star Pie. We get it. But, the interesting thing is, like, he goes into a lot of explanation, like with Rose, he talks about why he likes that and Girl in the Fireplace and things like that. And then with Rings of Akaten, his explanation is, I like it a lot. And then we move on with the list. But it's, you know, as is right and proper for someone that grew up with the show, his first four episodes are New Who, and then the other six are classics. So, I mean, you know, Terror of the Autons, The Ark in Space, Frontier in Space, you know, so a lot of the good classic episodes are in there too. So it's just very interesting, and it kind of gives you a view of like what he feels the show is to him. So definitely worth going and looking through there and, you know, compare it to your own list and see how it stacks up. And then we've got a slight nod to Doctor Who with a new production company that's been coming out. Julie Gardner, who is, you know, who most people will know as the executive producer back in the RTD era, has started up a new production company with Jane Tranter, and they have named it Bad Wolf.
That's clever.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that they have any ties to Doctor Who or Torchwood or anything like that, aside from, you know, obviously Julie Gardner. But, yeah, I think it's a nice way of, like, you know, making a nod to the show. So, I'll be interested to follow this one and see what kind of stuff comes out of it, though.
Yeah.
Oh, and then, so if you're in the UK or, you know, are planning a trip there to use their internet or something, you can actually watch this little bit where the BBC execs are, it's kind of a Q&A session, kind of like a web show, something, you know, ask the execs. And the title of this one is, Could Missy Be the Next Companion?
Actually, you don't have to be in the UK. It's letting me watch it right now.
Yay. I guess they opened it up for everybody else. I know when I first found this, it was UK exclusive.
Maybe I'm just special.
But it's kind of, it's one of those misleading things where you know, give it the title and then the very first, you know, it starts off with them being like, no. So it's, obviously you get the answer fairly quickly, but it is kind of nice to hear some of the explanation and the reasonings behind it, but you know, kind of get a little view of how they look at the character and where it needs to go from here. So not too long a video. I think it's relatively short,
under 2 minutes. Yeah,
okay. So sorry, I haven't actually been able to watch the entirety of it. All right, and for anyone who has yet to see Series 8 of Doctor Who, first off, what are you doing listening to this show? You know, spoiled it all to hell by now. But Series 8 will be hitting Netflix on August 31st.
Which gives you a month to get through it before the new series starts.
No, it gives you like 2 weeks. Well, 2.5 weeks. Cause
the series 25th. Starts. Oh, never mind. I'm off by a week. Something else is happening like the 25th. Maybe.
Second day of my classes? I don't know.
Whatever.
So, yeah.
Whatever. 2 weeks is plenty of time to watch a show on Netflix.
Exactly. I mean, come on. That's a weekend. my son found Better Off Ted, and he managed in the course of like 2 days, literally 2 days, to go through both seasons. I was like, wow, that's impressive. Granted, he's 13. He's built to do that kind of thing, but.
Right. You just give him some Mountain Dew and a change of underwear every once in a while. He's good to go.
Yeah. The great thing was the moment when he hit the one episode and comes running out of his room holding his little tablet. And he's like, dad, look, there's a Dalek. Oh, it was very fun. Very interesting to see him get so excited about it.
I have seen not a single episode of Better Off Ted.
Oh, I wish it had made it longer. It was entertaining. Just,
I feel that way about a lot of shows.
Yeah. Firefly. Sorry. Coming down with something. All right, so the next news article that we've got is Long Island Who has added some new guests to their list, and this is impressive, especially for a third-year convention. But, I mean, we've got some huge names here. Obviously, we've got Paul McGann, Kading Manning, Carol Ann Ford, but they have recently just added Noel Clark, so Mickey Smith, and Rose's mom, Camille Corduroy. Camille Corduroy. Those two are great to see on stage together because they do have such a great friendship. So, definitely looking forward to seeing the two of those. Dan Starkey will be there as well. Annette Badland. We've also got, I know I'm going to screw up her name here. I apologize, but, Nina Toussaint White.
I think you got it. Good job.
Woohoo. Yeah. I went to a different school than SP for name pronunciation. played Melody from
she played Mels.
Mels, right? Sorry,
right.
Who then became Melody, and whatever.
Yeah,
yeah. So from the episode "Let's Kill Hitler." So, but yeah, then some more people. You know, Fraser Hines coming back, which is going to be awesome. Wendy Padbury. So, if you have not gotten your tickets for this convention,
hold on a second. Did you finish reading her bio? She's hosting a yoga workshop at the con.
Oh, come on. That's fantastic. I don't even do yoga, but I'll show up for that one. I mean, come on. Who wouldn't?
Okay, carry on.
Yeah, but definitely go over and get your tickets because this is going to be a fantastic convention. I keep thinking, is it November yet? I want to see Series 9, but I'm really looking forward to November too. So it's going to be spectacular. All right, and then the last bit of news that we've got right here is apparently Capaldi's surprise cameo from the 50th anniversary, you know, when you've got all 13 doctors and you get the eyebrows. Apparently that's actually going to be explained in Series 9.
Is it going to be explained like the ring was explained?
They didn't give you a time frame on the ring thing, though.
Okay.
I mean, they're specifically saying in Series 9, this is going to be addressed. This is going to be, you know, explained. So it's not one of those like, yeah, we'll get around to it when we can. But, you know, so it's...
Okay.
I'm looking forward to this one. But so that actually brings up a good topic that we're going to address on next week's show. As we're coming up on Series 9, some of the questions that we've got that still haven't been answered yet, obviously, you know, the ring being the big one. So we're going to take a look at some of the answers or some of the questions that we don't have answers to yet, you know, the Caecilius and Frobisher connections and things like that. So all of the questions that we've got burning in our head that we want the answers to so that we can line them up, put them on a checklist so that when series starts, we can start just, you know, crossing them off. So if you have any of those questions that you want to share with us, anything that you want added to the list, then please, please go ahead and write to us. You can find us on Twitter, on Facebook, any of the information in the show outro. Find a way to get a hold of us and let us know what your questions are for Series 9. You got anything to say closing up?
I just can't wait to hear what other questions people might have that we haven't thought of yet.
Yeah, I can't wait. So, all right. Well, this has been episode 146 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, Kier went to the UK and all I got was this stupid podcast about it.
Me too.
And this is Kier saying, no, you didn't. You just don't get your prize until November. Just be patient.
And this is Haley saying, I'll open my own Doctor Who experience with blackjack and hookers.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2015.